In the weeks prior to Christmas, there is nothing but preparation. We're busy buying presents, decking the halls, or at least the Christmas tree with decorations. Cakes are made, food bought, invitations issued, and yet the nativity stories involve little preparation. Young parents discover that they're expecting a child, then not just unsettled by the illegitimacy, they're unsettled by a census and make their way to an unknown town and give birth in the least hygienic of situations. Unexpected guests bring unusual presents that they can see no purpose for. The contrast for Easter is striking. We do little to prepare for Easter, except to remember to buy Easter eggs, at least for children. Some of us might not remember to do that until Good Friday. In the 7 weeks of Lent, we make vague attempts at religious observance, but apart from Easter Day, we remain uncertain about the need for preparation. We would be happy to swing from the celebration of a palm procession to the celebration of an empty tomb. After all, who wants to dwell in the dim and dismal of Holy Week? It's a week we least understand. It doesn't fit with our expectations of faith, because faith's meant to lift us up, isn't it? Shouldn't we leave the church rejoicing that we've had an experience of the divine and be able to face the lives beyond this place? In stark contrast to our lack of preparation for Easter, perhaps even for the full aspect of life, the story from Palm Procession, the journey through Christ's Passion, is full of preparation. But it's certainly not all highs. There is celebration, but it is equally, if not more, emotional, heart-wrenching, touching to the deepest soul-searching moments of human existence, and yes, sometimes darn depressing. As we join the crowd for the palm procession, Jesus has made preparations for this moment. He knows that on the other side of Jerusalem, a larger state procession is taking place as the Roman governor arrives in town for the religious festival. Jesus' procession is counterculture. It's not about power, but about love. And he's prepared for this. He's arranged for the colts to be made ready so that when the disciples go to fetch them, the owner is not surprised by their arrival. Judas prepares for his betrayal. He's been seething, if not for months, then certainly for days. His meeting with the high priest is no unexpected gathering. Instead, he's made contact. He knows they want Jesus. He knows he can hand him over. He knows he's greedy. And this is an easy way to make money. Judas is preparing for the revolution that he thought Jesus would bring, but is now recognizing may not happen as he hoped. The disciples prepare for Passover. After days, weeks, months, years of traveling from town to town with Jesus and without Jesus in the missions he has sent them on, they find that this Passover they will be in Jerusalem together. They've made their pilgrimage to the holy city, and if they are to make full benefit of the festival, there is much to be arranged. A room big enough for the full entourage. Food. They're full of excitement. It will be 24 hours of friendship, of sharing memories, of noticing the high points and planning for the future. And on that night, when the disciples had expected a celebratory meal, Jesus is preparing them. He prepares them for betrayal. Jesus has seen the hunger and anger in Judas's eyes, and he knows what's coming. The disciples haven't seen the slow withdrawing of their friend as he scurries off to collude. So Jesus prepares them all for the disbelief. He prepares them for denial. He's walked with them for 3 years, and he knows their weaknesses and strengths. And while they all might think they can cope with anything, when challenge comes, they will struggle. It might be Peter that we remember as the one who denies. It may be him who takes all the blame. But every disciple denies their knowledge of Jesus as they scurry in fear and hide, lest they get captured and tortured too. Jesus prepares them for the grief. He senses the burden of the anguish they will feel, whatever lies ahead. And he offers an assurance of comfort, and not just of comfort, but a comforter, a spiritual presence that will walk with them in the deep, dark valleys of grief and lead the way to new horizons yet to be discovered. Like no other part of the gospel story, in whatever gospel narrative we choose to read, are we so aware of Jesus preparing the disciples? Preparing them for what lies ahead. Preparing them for life without him. That being prepared by Jesus is so prominent that it seems a little odd that we choose to ignore much of what Holy Week might be meeting with our ordinary lives. And yet when it comes to living every day, I can guarantee that almost every one of us makes plans, prepares for the task we're going to do or the events we're part of. And we prepare because when we're not prepared, we feel uncomfortable and uneasy, not quite ready to face life. So why, when it comes to Holy Week, do we only want to revel in the good parts? Here is a week when, if we encounter every day, every moment of fellowship, every moment of love, every moment of anger, every moment of betrayal, every moment of pain, every moment of grief, every moment of fear, every moment of loneliness, every moment of emptiness, every moment of darkness, then we are prepared for the fullness of life. As Jesus prepares his disciples, he prepares them to be the best they can be. And they can only do that through a full understanding and experience of the expression of life. As the disciples of this generation, rather than hide from the dark, anxious moments, we should greet them head on and allow Christ to prepare us to be the best that we can be in our service of God. Amen.